in Europe. This is the time of day when the Columbia Broadcasting System brings you news from abroad. And this is Bob Trout in New York about to call in CBS representatives for their reports direct from Europe. Today, the German offensive seems to be underway all right, even though those small raids on the English coast were in the nature of tests. On the Western Front, you know, the German troops have pushed the French soldiers back off German soil at a heavy cost in men, according to the French reports. Let's hear first from the capital city of the nation which is moving into action on land and on the sea and in the air. For the report of William L. Shirer, we take you now to Berlin.
Good evening. This is William L. Shirer in Berlin. The hero of Germany tonight is one Lieutenant Captain Kühn, a typical daredevil German submarine commander, who returned with his U-boat to Germany today and recounted to his fellow countrymen an almost unbelievable story of how he got into the British naval base at Scapa Flow and shot his torpedoes at some of Britain's greatest battleships. A World War German submarine commander told me tonight that the Germans tried twice to get a U-boat into Scapa Flow during the last war, but both attempts failed and the submarines were lost. Even German naval circles appeared to have believed that a submarine had only one chance in 100 of getting into Scapa Flow, but that one could get into it, blow up a battleship, and fire a torpedo at a second, as the Germans claimed, and then get safely out of that formidable naval base, protected as it is by steel nets and mines, not to mention torpedo boats, while the Germans themselves didn't believe it possible. And that's why up in the German naval bases, and also in Berlin tonight, there's more of a feeling of victorious elation than you noticed when the German army walked into Poland. The hero himself, Admiral Rader, the German naval chief, went up to the seaport to welcome him back today and decorate him and his crew with iron crosses. The hero himself is a dark, blonde, stocky little fellow, just over 30, married and father of one child. A few minutes ago, he broadcast an account of his exploit, and this is what he said. That he sighted the boom protecting the entrance to Scapa Flow, studied it, then headed his submarine through it without mishap. He took a quick glance around with his periscope, noticed a battleship in front of him and one behind, both lying at anchor, and loosed his torpedoes at once. Before he could get away, he goes on, he saw by the battleship to the north of him a great fountain of water followed by a fountain of flame. In the meantime, in the opposite direction, he observed that the ship to the south of him had exploded. He speaks of three, one after another, and then the bridge, masts, guns, and all went up in the air. The ship burst to pieces like atoms, was the way he put it. This, he surmised, was the Royal Oak. As to the first ship, which he thinks was a repulse because of its two funnels, he says he observed as he was steaming out of the bay that the forward part was sinking into the water, and that's why he reported that the repulse was, in his opinion, put out of action. Having seen the damage, he says, he lost no time in edging his way through the boom and out into the open sea. The English, he said, apparently thought he was still in the harbor, as he could hear depth gun discharges at a distance. Apparently no attempt was made to pursue him, and he got safely back to Germany this morning. I returned now to Columbia in New York.
That was Berlin. Now, the news from Paris has been that the French retreat from German soil was a move carefully planned in advance. For the very latest news of Paris, here is the report of Thomas B. Grandin. Go ahead, Paris.
This is Paris. The communique from General Headquarters this evening shows no very striking development. Here it is. Local activity along the whole front. Positions are the same as this morning, though there has been hotly contested infantry fighting at certain points. A German merchant ship was captured by our Atlantic fleet. That's the end of the communique. It shows that no big German offensive has been launched as yet. The French forces appear to be waiting along the line of resistance mapped out by the high command here, as I told you this morning, after the partition of Poland, which came earlier than expected and made France decide to adopt defensive rather than offensive tactics. Now, we understand as far as Hitler's strategy is concerned that a message of great importance has been sent from Berlin to Moscow. The Paris Soir believes this letter to be the beginning of the Soviet-German consultation that were specified in the accord signed on September 28th between the two powers. The main subject listing comment in the evening papers is, of course, the meeting at Stockholm tomorrow. Editorials here state that Finland is a nation closely connected with Scandinavian countries, and according to French opinion, Finland, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark have a mutual interest in warding off both Russian and German imperialistic expansion northward. Germany, it's thought, has two aims in view. First, to make these northern neutral countries sponsor Germany's peace offensive. It's asserted here that Nazi propagandists are trying to marshal up the specter of Bolshevism. Frenchmen are saying Hitler admits his mistake and is urging the Scandinavian states not to make the same one. I know absolutely nothing of all this firsthand. I merely report what's being said here. The second aim of Germany, according to the Paris Times, is to dominate Denmark and Sweden completely in an economic way. It's pointed out that Swedish iron ore is essential to the Reich. Moscow, on the other hand, declares Jules Sauerwein in the Paris Soir is like an octopus, sending tentacles toward Bessarabia, Lemberg, and the southern shore of the Baltic. And now, a fourth long Soviet arm, he writes, is obviously going to be pushed through Finland into Scandinavian countries. Jean Souvenin believes that Pasavitsky returned to Helsinki with three definite suggestions from Moscow, namely, that Finland should cede military bases to Soviet Russia, that Finland should give up any hope of remilitarizing the Åland Islands, and that a treaty of mutual military assistance should be signed between the two nations. Paris seems to think that Finland might accept the first two proposals, but the third would jeopardize Finland's neutrality, and that, to safeguard that, according to the press here, is just what the Stockholm Conference has been convened for, because the Finnish problem involves the neutrality, to be or not to be, of all Scandinavia. This is Thomas Grandin returning you now to London for a report from Edward Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The German war in the air occupies the attention of Britain tonight. For the east and the northeast coast of England, the side nearest to Germany, this has been a day of air raids and air alarms. Two air raids actually took place on Staffa Flow, the famous naval anchorage in the Orkney Islands off the Scottish coast. His Majesty's ship Iron Duke, an old battleship now used for training purposes, was damaged. But the official announcement says there were no casualties. According to the latest information, four or five German planes were brought down during the course of the day. Mr. Winston Churchill, the broad, bald, belligerent First Lord of the Admiralty, stood in the House of Commons today and told its members that the Royal Oak was sunk while riding at anchor at Scapa Flow. How the U-boat penetrated the defenses of the harbor is a mystery. It was invulnerable during the entire period of the last war. It appears possible, at least, that the submarine has escaped. Mr. Churchill described the affair as a remarkable exploit of professional skill and daring. Two official statements, called white papers, were issued in London today. The first deals with Sir Neville Henderson's version of the events leading to the outbreak of the war. That document will be of primary interest to historians. But the other white paper deals with an important problem still unsolved, India's cooperation in the conduct of the war. Briefly, the Viceroy of India, Lord Linlithgow, proposes the establishment of a consultative group representing the major political parties in British India and the Indian princes, over which the Viceroy himself would preside. At the end of the war, the British government would be willing to hold consultation for the purpose of framing such modifications of India's relations to the British Empire as seen possible. The first reactions of the All India Congress Party to this proposal have been unfavorable. There is no late news from the Western Front. So far as we know, British troops have not been in action. But radio listeners in this country tonight heard the first sounds of British troops in France. They heard a record of British boots on French cobblestone and the sound of bagpipes as the British battalion marched toward the front. An Amsterdam newspaper reports through its Berlin correspondent that Pastor Martin Niemöller, the German evangelical pastor who has been in a Nazi concentration camp for the past 2 years, has asked to join the German forces. Pastor Niemöller is said to have written to Nazi authorities pointing out that he was not asking to be released from the concentration camp, but that his patriotism had induced him to take this step. There's a brief message from Bill Henry, Columbia's war correspondent with the Royal Air Force in France. He says, I drove for miles today behind the lines in northern France. I thought of the strange and ugly tricks that war can play. Near pleasant acres where the farmer's plow and harrow have smoothed the marks of 20 years ago, there still remain long stretches where holes and mounds and strangely interconnected ditches give mute evidence of a war which neither time nor toil has yet succeeded in erasing from the earth. The woods were fenced off with wire, barbed wire, rusted and weather-worn, a relic from the last war. Just inside was a large sign which read, "Reserved from Hunting." Now, here's one piece of information for Major George Fielding Elliott, who I understand is to follow us on this program. It has to do with British troops in France. Naturally, being British, they prefer British beer. Some of the troops in France have been a little less than enthusiastic about the French beverage. But there is good news for the discontented today, because last week, 4,800,000 pint bottles of British beer were shipped to the field force in France. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
That was London. After some weeks of diplomatic movements, the news is now military news. As the Germans give signs of carrying the war to the British Isles, here to discuss the military picture is CBS military expert Major George Fielding Elliott. And here's Major Elliott.
Further information on the sinking of the British battleship Royal Oak reveals that this ship was torpedoed by a German submarine in the heart of the main British operating base at Scapa Flow. The Germans also insist that the battlecruiser Repulse was damaged by the same submarine. It is indeed surprising that a German U-boat should have been able to penetrate the narrow and difficult channels leading into this base. Still more surprising that she should have escaped after torpedoing a British battleship. The submarine commander, Lieutenant Commander Preen, who has returned safely to Germany with his ship, must be given credit for a most gallant and skillful exploit. But what are we to think of the defense arrangements of the British Navy at this important base? It is necessary to recall that in 1914, when Scapa Flow was first used as a base for the British fleet, the question of its vulnerability to submarine attacks proved seriously disquieting to the Commander-in-Chief, Lord Jellicoe, who repeatedly mentions in his memoirs the unsatisfactory conditions in this respect which caused him many anxious hours. It certainly would appear that in 25 years, either effective measures could have been taken to protect British warships lying inside Scapa Flow, or if such measures were found to be impracticable, some other base might have been selected. The German air attacks, which succeeded in damaging two large cruisers and a destroyer on the Firth of Forth, and the subsequent air attacks on Scapa Flow itself, in which injuries were inflicted on the old battleship Iron Duke, once Jellicoe's flagship, indicate that the Germans are, as previously suggested in these broadcasts, working their air and submarine operations very closely together. Considered along with the loss of the Royal Oak and the previous loss of the Courageous, they must raise in the minds of all observers the question as to whether the Admiralty have adequately considered the risks to which large ships are exposed in operating within range of enemy shore-based aircraft in these narrow waters.
I'm sorry, Major Elliott, but our time is up. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.